All right, ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to announce I've got David Morgan with the Morgan Report on the show. First time I've ever reached out to someone, of his stature, someone with his knowledge. Got his book, Second Chance, How to Make and Keep Big Money from the Coming Gold and Silver Shockwave. He's got a co-author, David H. Smith, and of course himself, David Morgan. And I'm just going to read the first paragraph on the back of this. Do you miss gold and silver spike runs to $1,900 and to $50 in 2011? Did you get in near the top and ride them all the way down into the December 2015 lows? Or perhaps you didn't buy at all, and by late 2016, while the most explosive precious metals and mining stock run-up in decades was taking place, you watched. You may think you've missed the boat, but you would be wrong. And without me ever knowing about this book, I would have agreed with that statement without even thinking twice. But you believe in it so much, you wrote the book. So what is this book about, and why and how is there a second chance for people to capitalize on this?
Well, most markets go through three major up moves, and I'm not a big Elliott wave guy, but that goes into the Elliott wave on a core level. In other words, the fundamental thing you learn in Elliott is, you know, three waves up, two waves down in a major secular bull market for anything, stocks, commodities, real estate, whatever. And if you think back to Alan Greenspan, Joe, we looked at the irrational exuberance. Remember that? And the stock market doubled from that point. So the point I'm trying to make is that what it says in the following paragraph that you didn't read is that 90% of the move comes in the last 10% of the time. Now, I can prove that happened in 1979 to 1980. It's an arithmetic problem. It's, you know, sixth grade math. But really, what took place was when we went off the silver coinage in 1965, which the monetary value at the time was $1.29 an ounce. It went to roughly $6 by January of 1979. So you had a long 14-year hold that you had real profits and really inflation-adjusted prices, but they were actually modest gains. But if you were a rank speculator or an amateur or savvy, I mean, I don't care what label you put on it, for whatever reason, you decided that silver at an all-time high of $6 was a good buy, and you had the foresight to hold for 1 year, you made about 846% in about 8% of the time. Mm-hmm. So you made an 800% gain. Now, this is called the blow-off phase. And this is what happens to the real estate market. Remember, when you can't lose. Real estate never goes down. It only goes up. Location, 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 all that stuff. Well, that marked the top of the real estate market. Same thing with the tech wreck. So it's not unique to the metals markets. It will become most unique to the metals markets, I believe, and I think I can, you know, prove it to most people or make a good, strong argument, because the biggest collapse in the history of finance will be the collapse of the U.S. dollar. So there'll be real estate investors, there'll be bank accounts, there'll be pension funds, there'll be managed money, there'll be everybody going to what I call the run to gold. And the run to gold will spill over into the silver market. And there will be just huge panic buying. I think it'll be some greed, but mostly panic buying. But that's in the future. It may not take place. I believe strongly that something close to that will. And I'll just leave it there. So the idea is that if you bought silver at, you know, 40, even 50, certainly today you're not feeling very good about it, especially if you bought too much. That's one thing I've taught from the beginning. You know, 10% is probably enough for most people. 20% if you're really bullish like me. Obviously, I have more than 20%, but it's my livelihood. It's everything. I know more about it. But I'm not just metals only. I do have other investments. Regardless, I think it's going to be absolutely the biggest market we've ever seen.
So this could be something like, you know, I'm sure you're a little bit familiar with Bitcoin. It started off as quite low. People thought it was crazy when it hit $100. Like, this is insane. Then they thought it was crazy when it was $200. And then they didn't know what to think, like myself included, when it was over $1,200, even though it was briefly, came back down. Now it's back pushing 1,000 again. But, you know, why can't silver do the same thing for the same reasons? It seems like the Chinese, rather than going to precious metals mostly, they're tending to go towards Bitcoin right now. But when there's a flight to safety, there's a flight to safety. The whole world's not just going to jump into Bitcoin and say, that's it. I mean, we have thousands of years of history where gold and silver have proven to be valuable store of wealth and always used during a flight, the safety moment. And there's been numerous throughout history. I feel kind of like you do that's going to happen again. Like I said, when I got your book, I read the back of it, of course. I said, this looks great. I couldn't wait to dig into it, read the whole thing. And I have to say, out of every single page in this book, there's not even one thing, that I said to myself, well, I don't know about that, or, you know, couldn't agree with you on. I mean, you just made absolutely perfect sense with this. And you mentioned that the last part of a rally or the bull market is the last 10%. Can you talk a little more on that?
Well, you know, first of all, you can, you know, look at some of the lectures that are on my YouTube channel. It'll, you know, show you that it's a pretty simple, again, arithmetic problem. It goes through all markets. I think the biggest part is what I'll read out of the foreword of the book. It says, you know, we talk about, is it different this time? There's always arguments it is or it isn't. I said, what is different, though, is that the current cloud seeding by the government and the deluge of fiat money drenching us will result in unprecedented precious metals investment opportunities never before experienced in all of modern history. So whenever you use the word never, you better be very careful. Yeah. And what I mean by that is if you look at the history of 1980s run-up we were talking about a moment ago, what you saw was a move from in gold of roughly 300 to 850 on the spot market, 875 in the near futures, peak January 21st, 1980. It had a similar move to silver, but percentage-wise was only up, I forget the exact number, you can do the math, it was 350 or whatever percentage gold. The silver was up like 3846. It outperformed. It hit the monetary ratio of 16-1 at the high. So the silver gold ratio narrowed substantially in favor of silver. And I think all those things are going to repeat themselves. But the point is this: 1% of the population of the United States were fearful about the monetary system at that time frame, 1979, 1980, and a big rush came in and moved the metals up. Now, let's think about today. What if, imagine, 1% of the world's population wants to get into the metals? Not 1% of the U.S. The United States represents 5% of the world's population. What if the other 95% decide they need gold, that they have to have silver? I mean, you can imagine the rush into these metals. And that's why I think, don't know, but truly believe that we could see a situation this time, Joe, where you can't get it. I mean, as the interviews I do with Greg Hunter, you know, and others, of course, he has many people on the show, and most in the metals industry are, you know, similar to my thinking. And he says either you have it or you don't. There'll be a day that either you have it or you don't. And I think that's mostly true. I mean, you'll always be able to go into some coin shop or pawn shop and get a, you know, a rare coin or, you know, a bar or something like that. But for Eric Sprott to come in and say, I want 20 million ounces of fine silver and I want it delivered next month. Nah, I think you could see a day where, sorry, no way. So will that happen? I don't know. I think it could happen. And if it were to happen, the underlying mining equities would go ballistic because people that are late to the party will say, if I can't get real coin in my pocket, what do I do? And I'll panic. I say, well, here's a silver stock for 12 cents. I'm buying it. And by the end of that day, it'll be at 88 cents. I mean, this is what happened in 1980 with 1% of the U.S. population panicking in the metals. If it happens again, and I'm certain at some point it will, you're going to see, again, I think something that goes into the financial record books. I sound like I'm overselling it. I don't mean to, but I'm trying to give you the idea of what this, you know, 90% move in the last 10% of the time is going to look like and feel like. Because people that were hating silver, you know, loving it at 30 when they bought it, hate it now, hate me now, whatever. Boy, once that starts going to 40, 50, 60, 70, all of a sudden it's like it's, and the hardest thing for me is going to be to take a profit and tell my people to take a profit. And obviously I plan to tell my paid members that I'm, you know, easing out of the market. And as you know, since you read the book, you know, there's a lot of ways and strategies to make sure that you profit. A lot of retail investors, the average investor out there, unfortunately, rides some of these markets all the way up and all the way down. You don't want to get married to anything in the investment world. You might want to get married to a nice woman. That's different. But on the investing score, there's a time to reap. they're a time to sow and a time to reap.
Yeah. And I have a lot of subscribers. Sometimes they'll email me and, well, you know, you want me to buy these precious metals and, you know, what am I going to do? Sell it for paper money? And the answer is yes. I mean, if you have a big boatload of paper money coming your way at that time, all of our debts are in that paper money. So if you owe, you know, $150,000 on your house today, and in 6 years from now, let's say something like this were to happen, and you owe whatever's left on your mortgage, you can take that silver and get a huge amount of money for it, pay off your house. Your house doesn't go up just because the currency's collapsing or hyperinflation is taking place. So I explain to people, yes, believe it or not, that's the currency we use in this country. You're not going to the store to buy groceries with silver coins, but you're going to use this at that point as an investment. I've always told people, hang on to it for like saving your financial livelihood one day. But after studying this for so long, I said, you know, man, I think you're not just going to be saving your financial livelihood. When this really goes, I got a sneaky suspicion that you're going to be, you know, depending on how much you have, you can make a small fortune just doing this. So that was kind of my take on it. The other thing, and I'm sure you've heard JP Morgan with this massive accumulation of physical silver. From my understanding, you can only buy or demand delivery of so much silver per month on the, you know, COMEX. And they're essentially taking that maximum, like every month that's been going on for, I don't know how many months or a couple years now. And they allegedly have like, you know, 500,000 or 500 million ounces or something like that. I look at that and say, well, again, we know who JP Morgan is, and these guys are the same people, the banks, that they don't make mistakes. They have perfect 365-day trading days. They are flawless. So when I look at someone like that and they're taking this huge position in physical, that's the key word. They're not playing the paper game. They're getting the physical gold or silver. Doesn't that speak kind of to what you're saying? Like they're going to make a huge move. They're going to make a huge gain like they always do. They only do things when there's blood on the street. So are they prepping, in your opinion, for the day where there's blood on the streets, where, like your book says, second chances here, and JP Morgan's going to capitalize massively?
Yeah, a couple of things, Joe. First of all, I agree that, you know, can we sell metal for paper and pay off debts or accumulate other things? The answer is yes. I just want to add on that it's a very remote possibility that, you know, the dollar isn't accepted or whatever. But even in that case, you're still legal in this country to do contracts. So let's say the bank doesn't accept dollars. I mean, this is a worst case scenario. Well, what you do then is you say, I'm going to trade you this amount of silver for your house. Or, hey, Mr. Banker, I owe $150,000 on my house. How about 10 ounces of silver? I'm being a little facetious here.
Sure.
But you get the idea. So I just want to add that on because I did address that in the book slightly. As far as the JP Morgan thing, that's a very interesting one. I do know from the warehouse receipts that what JP Morgan has in the public domain. This cannot be disputed. Now, people argue that the COMEX lies, cheats, steals, whatever. I'll be neutral on that for the time being. Let me just state that the 500 million ounces is not even close. There's about one-fifth that amount that I can account for and put, you know, in a court of law and say this is how much they own. Do they own that much? I doubt it. Personally, I know who has made that claim, and I have all kinds of respect for Ted Butler. I've known Ted for probably – I was probably one of the first ones to reach out to Ted Butler. I mean, truth be known, I introduced Ted to Jim Cook of Investment Rarities Incorporated, and Jim Cook hired Ted as one of his writers, and Ted probably got more exposure through Investment Rarities at the beginning than any other way he might have. So I don't know is the answer. I doubt they have that much. And the reason I make that argument, Joe, is because if you were taking off that much physical, it would probably have to be reflected in the paper price. And it hasn't been. But, you know, do I know for a fact? No. What I know for a fact is what they show on their books and what I can disclose and show my people that, you know where to get the information. And I can show you what they have as far as the reporting requirements are concerned. But regardless, let's get back on track here. They have gone from essentially no physical holdings to massive physical holdings. Not the amount that some think, but I can't prove. Also, I happen to be in the Delaware Depository taking a tour with the founder of the company. And he took me under his wing and gave up half of his day to take me personally around the facility. And his partner was in the office. We kind of finished the day at his office. And he said, did I know? And people assume I know more than I do at times. I've never said I know everything about the silver market. I'm a lifelong learner. I want to learn everything I can.
Yep.
Did you know that this XYZ was being set up in Hong Kong? And I said, no, I didn't. He goes, well, you know who it is, don't you? And I said, well, I could guess. He goes, well, it's JP Morgan. So, you know, they've been there early. Well, let me state it a different way. They've been there a little bit late. In other words, we had a pretty good run in silver up to the 750 level. I called that top. We got up to 21. I called that top. And then they came down. They really didn't get interested in it as far as, I'm not talking about the paper stuff. That's been going on forever. Okay, let's be clear. I'm trying to separate the two. They didn't get interested in banking physical for some time. In other words, they've been more recent to the market than people might be led to believe. Paper-wise, no. They've been in it the whole time. Putting silver in their bank physically, that hasn't been that long for them. When I say that long, I mean I'm talking like a decade. I'm not, you know, go back to Scotia Macata, for example. Yeah. It used to be Macata was a private company bought by Scotia. But regardless, they've been around forever. So anyway, I probably beat that horse to death. We can move on.
All right. So earlier we were talking, you know, before we start recording, and you mentioned you knew, you know, you knew Cliff High and stuff and the web bots. And when did you, how and when did you meet Cliff High, or did, was it that you heard about the web bot first, or you found him somehow, or how'd that go?
Great question. So one of my early subscribers, I mean early, asked me if I'd heard anything about the web bot, I think is how he referred to it. No, I don't know what's the web bot, you know? And he says, well, there's this guy, George Urs, who he referred me to.
Yep.
And I said, okay. And so I started looking at George's site, and I looked at it. And a lot of his economic thinking was similar to mine. He's saying a lot of things similar to me. And, you know, no one's going to agree with me on everything, and nor should they. It would be a very boring world if that existed. But, you know, I started reading his site. I got a little bit interested in it, and I kind of put it on the back burner. You know, I kind of got busy with other things and didn't frequent his site that much. And then I think a couple of years went by, and I got a consultation, and this savvy Asian woman from Toronto, Canada, called me up for a consultation. And she said, did I know anything about the web bot? And I said, yeah, I know a little bit about it. I know the theory about it, and, you know, a little bit, I think. She goes, well, do you know that the web bot is predicting like a $600 silver price? And I said, no. No, I didn't know that. So at that, when I started getting Cliff's reports, every month I would pay for them. And every now and then I'd have fun with him, and I'd send him a little email. I'd say, hey, if you want silver instead of, you know, PayPal or whatever. Or, and I've sent him silver over the years, not many times, a couple of times I've sent him. But we've developed a relationship here the last couple of years. And, you know, he's getting more and more data about silver all the time. And the most recent one or two, and whenever I speak for somebody else, please take it with a grain of salt, because I don't want to misstate anything. But so I'll just say it as my understanding. And it's true that the industrial application side of silver is phenomenal. In fact, Joe, I just found something from one of my members that said, hey, look at this. And I thought it was the new electrics. It lined up, and it used a fairly significant amount of silver. So how long is this little device, you know, that you could power your house with that was going to be a game changer, my words, not Cliff's, been in the reports? And so this thing looked pretty good. So I actually got a hold of Cliff and said, hey, I hope I'm not interrupting, because I'm pretty cognizant of people's time. And he said, now send it over. So send it over. He looks, now I, you know, gave me several reasons why it's probably not. But the point is that we are moving in that direction. And I made the statement, in fact, going back to Ted Butler and Jim Cook, the founder of Investment Rarities Incorporated, I made the statement that silver is the best technology stock you can own. And I really believe that. Silver is used in anything electrical or electronic. And with all these gizmos and gadgets and high frequency whatever that we're doing, it takes a little bit of silver. And let's substitute something. In most cases, you can't. I mean, in some cases, for reflection, you can substitute aluminum, but it's not as good. For conducting, you really can't substitute much for silver. Oh, you could use gold, or you could use platinum palladium, but that's stupid. They cost more. Exactly. So silver is really unsubstitutable in many cases. Can it be? Yes. I'm going to drift down another notch here, Joe, if you allow me.
Yeah.
Photovoltaics. Solar has been on the increase for quite some time. It's kind of leveled off. The amount of panels is about double what it was about a decade ago. Yet the amount of silver used is the same. Why? Because efficiencies. People will squeeze the margins and everything in a capitalistic system that works. Anyway, I won't go down that road. So the panels are producing the same amount of power using half the amount of silver per panel. Why? Because they got smarter and smarter and smarter how to use the silver available per panel. And so if the panel sold in 2016 consumed the same amount as it did in 2008, there'd be about 140 million ounces of silver used annually in solar panels. Now there's only about 70 million, but that's the reason. It's like, well, solar's, you know, tapering off. No, silver usage in solar has tapered off because of better efficiencies.
Well, I was just doing a video the other day, and it looks like Volkswagen's the first one to do this, but they're saying they're going to start putting this thin layer of silver in their windscreens. And, you know, some of them is going to be an add-on, you know, like an option for $300-something extra. You can have this, but it helps keep the car cooler when the sun's beating on it all day. It has good reflective properties. Like, and I said, well, if that's just Volkswagen, all the other car companies are going to follow, you know, suit. That's what they always do. They got a good idea. Let's make sure our cars have that, you know? So, yeah. I mean,
yeah, they're not the first. I mean, some of the high-end cars have used silver for years, but no, but you're right. And the other thing is there's silver batteries that really aren't very well known. In fact, in this month's Morgan Report, I'm just putting the finishing touches on it right now. And, you know, I want people to know the Morgan Report looks at all the resource markets, not just silver. Silver is my favorite metal. It is my specialty, but we did so much more. But we're looking at lithium, vanadium. I wrote about manganese, I can't even say it, cobalt, one I followed for a long time, and all these metals, and most of them would have to do with, you know, battery and battery efficiency. I still believe that the most bang for your buck, lack of a better term, is a silver-based battery, but obviously they're very expensive. But if you want a mil-spec, a military thing, and you're going to go to battle or whatever, and that isn't talked about very much. I mean, the big rumor when Buffett bought 129.7 million ounces of fine silver off the exchange before the rule change, where he could only take 7.5 million ounces off the exchange, and he took 90 million ounces came off the exchange when he bought. So there was 40 million they couldn't deliver to him, but that's another story. And the price shot up for a while and came back down. But, you know, it just goes to show that there's so many demands on silver that a little bit can go a long way. And again, it's the investment side and the industrial side that will probably be a synergistic effect, both happening at the same time. And then the users will probably panic. I mean, you don't want to be Apple, you know, putting out your new iPhone 9 and run out of silver, even though it only takes, you know, five one hundredths of an ounce per phone or whatever it is,
right?
You still have to have it, especially when you're producing, you know, 400 million phones.
And you're going to want to get when you see an issue as a company making a business decision, you're going to say, let's get a little extra or a lot of extra.
Oh, yeah.
Like what I'm seeing right now. So let's make a huge order and stockpile this because there's some problems coming up. Well, that's one company. Anyone else with the same site is going to do the same thing.
Absolutely. You get me excited because you're exactly right. And so then the finance manager, the CFO, comes in and talks to the CEO and says, you know, we're losing our butts here. You know, inflation's getting so high. But you know that silver that we warehoused away? That made our balance sheet on the positive side for the month. I think we should buy some more just for investment purposes. I mean, that could happen. That's not an unlikely scenario.
Yeah, that's very possible. They may sell it back into the market. Let's make some money. Do you think, in your opinion, now that Donald Trump is president, again, it's just your opinion, that we may start to see some of the rigged, you know, pricing, that sort of thing, that apparatus maybe go to the wayside? Or do you still foresee maybe, nope, nothing new under the sun, they're going to keep going as long as they can?
Well, the answer is I don't know, but I'm going to drill down there quite a bit because I got that from a few of my members that know me. First of all, you probably know, Joe, I know you're pretty well studied and versed in a lot of aspects. The Trump University, love it or hate it, at one time was pretty much aligned with Robert Kiyosaki. Robert Kiyosaki was aligned with, or maybe Mike Maloney was aligned with Robert Kiyosaki, would be a more proper way to say it. And at one time, Mike and Robert were pretty close, and Mike was one of the Rich Dad advisors, and you know, went all around the world talking about the merits of gold and silver investing. And Mike and I have known each other for years. He used to speak at the Silver Summit, which was one of the early conferences that we put on here in the Silver Valley, which is about an hour from where I'm sitting right now. So regardless, there's this connection between these people. And so one of my members said, do you think, your same exact question, that with Trump in the White House, that they'll stop the manipulation of silver? And the answer, one, is I don't know. And two, I don't think so. And I'm going to add the word yet. The whole idea, what I wrote about Trump before the election, and I'm just putting it in this month's issue, is the influence of the deep state and how much the insiders have, and why the political system is so corrupt is because it's basically run by the bankers. Now, I know from what I've seen, Trump is a maverick. He's unpredictable. Certainly, he's not afraid to take action. I'm not sure he thinks through everything maybe as far as he might before he, you know, puts his name down. But, you know, that's my opinion. So I think there's a possibility of it taking place, but I don't think it's imminent. And I think, as he learns as he goes, he might get some feedback from, let's say, the cabinet members, where it might not be a good idea to rock the boat that far. Mm-hmm. I'm not too concerned with it from the aspect that all manipulated markets eventually fail. I don't care who's on top of them. The other part about a manipulation is that the people that manipulate get arrogant. I mean, if you see the kind of emails that we saw with the Deutsche Bank realization or finally proof that these markets are manipulated, and see what these traders were talking, trash talking the silver market, and how they, you know, could put their thumb on it any time they wanted. It's rather disheartening, to put it in polite terms, of what really goes on behind the scenes. So, long answer. I think longer term, it doesn't really matter. The market will correct itself at some point, but I'd love to see it. I would love to see, you know, not only are we cleaning up, you know, a lot of the insiders in Washington, and I'm putting that in quotation marks because I'm not sure how real that is, but I'll reserve judgment for now. But, you know, we're also going to look at the financial system, and, you know, the problem with all this stuff, Joe, as you know, is that the rules are on the books right now. They just don't enforce them. They enforce them on the long side. You couldn't take more than 1,500 contracts of silver off the exchange on a delivery month, but you could short all the silver you don't own. What's fair about that?
And do you remember, I think it was part of Dodd-Frank, where they started to put the position limits rule back in place.
Yeah.
And then at the last minute, literally a week, I think, before it was to be implemented, a federal judge, I think, out of New York says, I'm striking that part out. And the reason he gave was something along the lines of Congress didn't prove why that would have helped or whatever, you know, stem some of these issues that are being claimed. And I thought to myself, you don't have the right to say that. If they pass a law, they don't have to give you a reason why they're passing the law or to take care of this or take care of that. They just passed the law. It's now law. And no one really fought against it. And that was it. So I was like, oh, wow, imagine that. The position limit thing, which we were all dying for. Back out, you know, in outer space now, because some federal judge at the last minute struck it down. Of course, you know, he was told to do so and just doing what he's supposed to do. But like you, I believe, you know, kind of like they say, you shine the light on evil. Once it's exposed, it's going to come out for all to see. And then they can't leave it there and just say, well, that's the way it is. No, because then now we understand it's, you've been breaking the law and you've been cheating people. You've been picking winners and losers essentially on all these markets. So they're going to have to back off of that eventually. Question is when. I know you don't have the answer. I don't have the answer, but I do know that if we sit back and just keep holding and keep stacking, I think our day is going to come where we're rewarded. And not that we need to be rewarded. It's just that the stuff had to be exposed. We saw this coming way in advance. And I'll say this, you know, could we be wrong? Could we have all gotten this wrong? Guys like you, me, and some of the other, you know, experts. Sure. But man, we got a lot of history that shows how things usually go. And then usually means always goes, you know, throughout history. Sure, the technology changes, but people are people. Greed is greed. Like you said, the arrogance, when they get greedy and they get all this money and they got all this power and they're arrogant and they like to throw it in your face, And then, oh, we just got caught. Uh-oh. Well, then another thing gets caught. And then that one gets exposed. You know, just like it's not just Deutsche Bank that, you know, was rigging. They said, you know, there's a, you know, cadre of us. And if you kind of go lenient on us, we'll let you see some of these, you know, text messages back and forth. Like you said, I mean, I remember doing a video on that thinking, just reading some of the verbiage they're using. I'm like, can you believe, you know, makes you sick. It makes you mad. And, you know, Trader A and Trader B, they don't dare put their names. We, you know, we'd love to know who these, you know, bastards are. You know, I'm sure someone would find them and have a little talk, if not, you know, some hands on with them, I guarantee. Because, you know, I think I've mentioned this before. I know I have. I lost like $3,500 on a margin call in 2008 when they crushed silver. But you take someone who lost, you know, 100,000 or a couple hundred thousand and realize it's because of these guys. You know, they walk into the, you know, they see that trader on the street, they're probably going to have more than just words with them. And I don't blame them. But I think we've covered quite a bit of the stuff I really wanted to cover. I don't know if you want to add anything, but I'll start by just, you know, with the ending of this video, by just asking, if people want your book, Second Chance, where do you recommend that they go and get it?
Yeah, just go to the website, themorganreport.com, and there's a pull-down menu there for books. If they're really interested in, like, the silver manipulation, the previous book, The Silver Manifesto, has a whole chapter on the silver manipulation, which is like a lead pipe proof that it's manipulated. I think it's good if all of your viewers get on our free list. It's absolutely free. All I need is a first name and an email address. It's double opt-in, which means that we just check that you have a valid email. I'll give you the Riches and Resources report. And also, if you want to see the webinar I did for clients only that I've now brought out in the public called Is There a Silver Shortage? It goes through the deficit that we saw from 1990 to 2006, Joe, where we went from 2 billion ounces of silver down to 500 million ounces, purportedly what JP Morgan holds now. And we've gone back up since then. So there's a little bit of misunderstanding about if we're in a shortage situation or we're not. So that webinar is for free. I go through the numbers, I show it, I prove it to you. But it's not really about if we're in a shortage or not. Of course, a shortage is, you know, beneficial, but it's about everything we talked about on your show. It's about what's happening. And to just wrap it up, what you said, you know, we could be wrong, but look, there has never been a fiat currency that hasn't failed. Up until now, it's a 100% certainty. So if you think, like some are out there, and I won't name names, that paper trumps gold, good luck.
Yeah. And I'll add that, and let's go to the worst case. We're wrong. We got it wrong. Silver doesn't do this huge move, but it maybe sits around where it's at. It's better than a piece of paper that you just found out is worthless, whether that's a bond, a stock, or your fiat currency. No one is going to pull gold and silver out of the ground for free. So if you own something like that, that these people have pulled out of the ground, it has to have value no matter what. And like you said earlier with the whole, you know, industrial use of silver, forget investment, just the industrial use is going to tell you that this thing cannot go to zero or even close to it, because the miners are, they're going to go bankrupt. So no one's going to do it for free. And they're certainly not going to do it for super low prices. So that's another argument to hold at least some. And I think you said, I don't know if you said this earlier in this interview, but you normally recommend, I think, 10%. Is that right?
Yeah. If you go to the Google search engine or any good search engine, type in 10 rules of silver investing, David Morgan, that'll pop right up and you can read them. And the 10th rule is, no matter how good something is, there's something about too much of a good thing. Diversify, 10% is enough for most people. And then I was speaking at the San Francisco Investment Conference before the first Iraq war. And I said, you know, my whole speech is about wars, rumors of wars, and precious metals and fiat currencies. And I said, under the current conditions, I know we're going to war, and you might up it to 20%. And that's as high as I've ever said in the public domain. Of course, I have members, subscribers, and friends that have more than that. But that's our own business. You know, I'm free market, you know. I'm not going to tell anybody how to live their lives. I might, but I don't mean to. You're free to choose your own. But you can get too much of a good thing, and you don't want that. You want to feel good. You want to sleep well at night. You want to be hedged. You want to have a good enough profit potential that you own enough for that, but not so much that it makes you uneasy, because silver is a volatile commodity, money, industrial commodity, however you want to think of it.
Yep. Well, on that note, ladies and gentlemen, That is David Morgan of the Morgan Report. If you want to subscribe to his newsletter, which I recommend, like you said, that you have, you said you had two, one's free or both are free?
No, one's free and one's paid. The paid service, I do videos and show charts and talk about markets. And then the report itself does a lot in the economic scene, precious metals. And we do special reports all the time. Like I just told you, we did the energy metals, talking about cobalt, lithium, which is real hot right now, vanadium. We've talked iridium, platinum, palladium, magnesium. I mean, we go through the gamut. And there's opportunities in these things at the high level, which I call the top tier, growth companies that are what I call the mid-tier. And then the ones everybody loves and most newsletter writers focus too much time on, and that's the highly speculative story stocks. And yes, we do a few of those, but I vet them more than most writers because the way my, I don't know how to say this correctly, I wouldn't say integrity, although that's certainly part of it. Let's just say that my overall mission statement to teach and empower people to understand the benefits of an honest monetary system doesn't mean a whole lot if I'm not that way myself. So sure. All my speculations, I do the best possible job. And most of the penny stock players call my list blue chips. So that kind of gives you an idea or flavor of what I do.
Good. Well, I want to thank you very much for giving me the time coming on the show. I'm sure a lot of my subscribers know who you are. I've read your articles going back years ago. David Morgan. Then next thing I know, I'm in contact with you. Hey, we can do an interview if possible. It turned out, you know, just had to wait a little bit of time. I know you were a busy man, so it was totally worth the wait, of course, to have you on the show. So I want to thank you. Maybe sometime in the future, we'll do it again.
Great, Joe. Thank you.
All right. Take care.